Because you're directly, you know, you're somewhat directly impacted on that.
Right.
I mean, if it's something like, you know, what's something really innocuous that you have to come to the planning board for?
We don't have innocuous applications anymore.
No.
We got rid of all those.
Most of those would just come straight to you, right?
Yeah, we changed the ordinance so that the board didn't have to deal with those very simple projects.
Right. So you know, so generally I would say, because, you know, if you're totally in favor of it, then someone's opposing it, they're going to say, well, he was biased because he's right, you know, he's
in a bar.
He's right next door, right. And he's, you know, all in favor of this, he's probably best friends with him, he's a neighbor, you know, that's no good. So, right. Again, I think, you know, if you're too closely related to the project, it's a judgment call.
So back to Jay's question about doing site visits, should it be the expectation of the board to rely on the applicant to provide all the information they need to make a decision on the application? And if they can't get it, then they do a site visit as a group? I think I heard you say you didn't have a problem with a board member going to a site that was subject of an application, out of curiosity perhaps. But
I don't think they should enter onto the property, but like if they're driving by.
But driving by for the purpose of collecting information?
Well, just have a look. I mean, they want to get the lay of the land. Like, I'm a very visual person. I look at a map, and I'm...
But shouldn't they be expecting the applicant to give them that information? In photographs or videos? Or if they can't get it, they should go as a group?
Definitely should go as a group. But what I'm saying is, if you do go by yourself, and it's just you're not going on the property, and you're just curious because you want to see the lay of the land... Like, that's something I would do because I don't understand maps.
Right. Well,
then I think you can just come and say, well, look, I drove by there the other day. And sometimes you see something from driving by that you want to ask a question on, and I think that's fine. If you're by yourself and you don't go on their property and you don't talk to them, and sometimes you're going to go by without even knowing. Like, you might know the property, and so then the applicant comes before you. And again, we're getting back to that personal knowledge. You may not have gone and done a site visit, but you may know the property well because you're a neighbor, not a neighbor, but you know, you've been by it. So again, you might say, well, I know your property. Your map doesn't show this, you know, whatever, this wetland that I know is there or something, and you can ask questions about that.
This site visit, what, to get honest, I hate to beat this to death, but you've made your proposal to us, okay? And there's something in that site plan that I'm scratching my head about. Mm-hmm. Now, do I delay approving what you, until my question is answered? Or do I just say to myself, I'll go check that at another time? You know, by that drive-by visit. I mean, what...
I think you.
Where are you falling into?
Right.
What's
first
right and
thing
what's wrong?
You should be doing is asking the applicant if you have any questions or any clarifications, and giving them the opportunity to answer it, either at the time of the meeting or to say, "Look, I can have my surveyor provide a better, you know, map of it, or I can bring in."
What if they either can't or won't?
If you give them the opportunity and they can't do it, either because they don't have the money to pay for a surveyor. Or, you know, they just don't have the means or the desire to know what to do, and you've asked them several times, you could just deny, you know, if they haven't proven it. I think
is it bad to deny until my question is answered? That's what I'm getting at.
If your question is related to one of the criteria, and they haven't, so therefore they haven't provided the evidence.
Until I get an answer that satisfies me, you know. Am I justified in saying?
No, it's not so much satisfying you. It's satisfying the criteria. Yeah. So it's got
his opinion of the criteria, like his opinion that it's met or not. So
And I think you definitely, that's all the part of the discussion that you have. It's like, well, you know, he's presented this evidence, but I feel like we've got these unanswered questions. I'd like more information.
Maybe as I go to more of these meetings, all this is going to fall into place. But like I said, I'm really new with this,
and I just want
to make sure that I'm right.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they'll start the discussion, the deliberations, and then they'll say, look, you know, if we got an aerial photograph, that would be really helpful. And they're like, okay, I'll get an aerial photograph, and you know, tell me what else you want, and I'll run off and get it, and we'll come back the next meeting. And then there's the aerial photographs, and that answers the question. I agree with Jeff. If they've done a proper application, they're really, you know, 9 times out of 10, there's no need to do a site visit. sometimes...
It may never, ever come up the time that I'm on this board, but my question is, if it does.
Sometimes it can be helpful, depending on what the criteria is. Sometimes, you know, if it is a question about neighboring properties, you know, sometimes you want to get a visual of, like, how far away are the, you know, there's the houses, what kind of trees. I mean, even though it's on a map, sometimes you want to put yourself in those people's shoes. What is it, you know, really like at that property line? If that's the main issue of the, like, for a gravel pit or something, then maybe it's, you know, worth doing a site visit if you're really struggling with that issue. But otherwise, you know, there shouldn't be a huge need for it.
I think one of the hardest things we have to deal with sometimes is an applicant that's almost there. And they spend quite a lot of money getting there. But we request one more thing, and they don't do it. And we had one on Town Farm Road, I'm thinking of.
There's a subdivision application, yeah.
We just needed some runoff, I think is what we were looking for.
I can't recall that what it was.
I think that's what we were looking for, just a little bit. I mean, it was just a little bit more information. And they never came back. And that was after they were very nearly there. They had a good plan. And they went and bought another piece of land to get a right-of-way in because they couldn't get the right-of-way where they wanted to from the Henderson property. So they put quite a lot of effort into it, but it just wasn't quite there to receive approval. You remember it probably, yeah?
No, I don't remember going to that. I was probably reporting.
Maybe you weren't on the board. I thought you were, but...
No.
That's one of those things you want to coach them a little bit, but
yes, yeah, no. I mean, boards are usually very flexible and they're very lenient with giving people as much time as they need to satisfy the requirements. And generally, in my experience, with the exception of a couple of cases, you know, they're pretty. You know, if you have to meet a requirement like drainage runoff, they're going to sort of ask for something that's, you know, not going to be like a, you know, $10,000 report. It's going to be just something fairly easy for them to obtain. But the thing to remember, the burden of proof is on the applicant. So if you're not, if they haven't met the criteria and you're not quite satisfied, then it is up to them to get that evidence. And if they just don't, maybe they just had a change of heart. Maybe they just did a 180 and decided they didn't want that after all. I mean, you know, can't read too much into that, I guess.
I'm not quite sure if they ever did anything. Did they sell the property?
No.
I don't know what's ever become. I don't even think they're a town anymore, are they? They're the ones that own Spectacular Events, the father did.
He's building a new house on Town Farm Road.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things the board struggled with over the years is the lack of easy to understand language in the land use ordinance. The standards that they used to have were very vague and
they
misunderstand, and they struggled a lot with that, and as a result of that their application reviews tended to be a bit prolonged because they're trying to figure out what they were supposed
to
do.
What does it mean? Yeah.
So and that has an impact on the public image of the board. And they were getting a lot of criticism from business owners and developers about how long it used to take to get through the board. It was torturous, you know, in some cases. But they've come a long way. Now, our ordinance also has been improved, I think, with more details and more clarity.
That makes
your job a lot easier now.
I was going to say, sometimes that's an indication that the ordinance needs reviewing and updating. Mm-hmm. You know, and that gets into the whole other issue that's not in your jurisdiction to decide. But a lot of times some of the standards can be a little vague, you know, and you wonder what they mean, and there's no precision, and it's not up to the Board of Appeals either, but they're what you call constitutional issues, because if the language in your ordinance that says, you know, you have to meet these criteria, if the criteria is too vague, how does anyone know what they're supposed to meet? And that's a constitutional issue. And so that usually ends up being resolved by the superior court or the law court, who will either say, you know, no, it's not vague, you can, you know, interpret it this way, or they'll say yes. I mean, you know, if something says it's not going to, you know, impact the view of the neighborhood or something, if it's, and, you know, and you're like, what does that mean? And what am I supposed to show that? So some of the, you know, as time goes on, the provisions that cause problems can get updated, be more precise, I think. Sometimes it was when people were drafting ordinances, they would copy the ordinance from the town over, and it might not have been a good one. So there'd be a lot of old language saying, you know, just very unspecific criteria, which leaves it too subjective. And that means that an applicant doesn't know from, you know, what they're supposed to approve. And the board might, you know, approve one but not the other, even though they're both the same.
Hmm. Kind of reminds me, you know, of the reading. I mean, what we do now is so much easier, and you guys don't even realize that, but we used to sit here for hours reading the criteria and the findings, remember?
Yeah, you're one of the board members left for that time period. Yeah.
I'd forgotten all.
Yeah.
Well, you brought back an image.
Yeah. You know, they've had the public here actually criticizing them for their failure to do timely reviews and to make it very difficult for new businesses wanting to come into town.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And I think it's you know, it's sensitized the board to a certain extent, and they want to be able to say yes, and they understand that the yes has to be supported by the facts.
Yeah, yeah, because you're going to otherwise be criticized for, you know, just rubber stamping everything.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think if there's, you know, certain provisions that you're stumbling over again and again, then, you know, you need to form a committee to look at reviewing those, you know, with Jeff's help to make them easier to interpret or easier to identify. But, you know, once you've been to 10 more meetings, you know,
I'll be a veteran, eh?
Sure. I'll say Jay has spent many of his years stuck in neutral working in law enforcement.
Right.
He is in search for one gear direction.
I am.
He is. He is constantly in fact mode,
yeah.
As am I.
Yeah. Yeah.
If a board's decision is appealed, what role does the board play in that appeal process?
That will depend on, a lot of times it will depend on what the issue is, like what's being appealed. Like a lot of times the municipal offices, whether they're selectmen or a town council, will just say, you know, well, what do we, you know, we don't always really care in the outcome so much. We're not going to pay to have someone go and defend the board's decision. It's usually, you know, up to the applicant to do that. But for example, it goes to the Board of Appeals. You know, there's not too many situations where you'll have the planning board actively involved in that appeal process. Occasionally, it does happen if it's a controversial issue, and the planning board have felt like they really have to be defended in their decision and their review process. The municipal officers might agree to have an attorney representing the planning board at the hearing, and also have an attorney representing the Board of Appeals. That doesn't happen very often. So most of the time, if something's appealed to the Board of Appeals, the planning board doesn't usually take much of a role in that. Usually, you know, I think here, unless it's a variance, it's usually just an appellate review. So they're just looking at what the planning board did, so there's no more evidence coming in. Is that correct?
Right. So the reason I'm asking that is because we have had appeals, and I've been asked by board members if they should go to the hearing to state whatever or answer questions, and I'm not sure how to answer that question. Really, the Board of Appeals is reviewing the record of the board. Right?
They're reviewing the record of the board, and I think that they definitely, you know, I think they need to decide as a board whether they can nominate one person to be the spokesperson, and they can certainly go and say, look, you know, if you have any questions, I'm here to answer them. And you can also advocate. You can go and advocate for your decision and just say, you know, I mean, most of the time boards don't, but you can. And you can go and say, look, you know, the reasons are stated there in the record. And you can talk to those. You can't give new evidence, obviously, but you can advocate for the reason why you made it. Most of the time, the boards don't do that. But you can. And you can certainly go and sit in the public and listen and watch. You know, can do that. The other way around, though, like the Board of Appeals, people should not be coming to the planning board meetings because they might end up having to listen to them on appeal, so they shouldn't really be partaking or listening in those.
So another question kind of related to this is the planning board is the municipal reviewing authority for drafting changes to the zoning ordinance of the town, and they do that, and then they forward their recommendations to the town council. On occasion, the town council has rejected a change brought forward from the planning board. Does the planning board have any recourse if they believe that the council's decision was not appropriate?
Well, yes, they can just ignore it because it is, the attorney doesn't, or the council doesn't have the authority to make the decision, but you know, they're their counsel, and they're usually giving a reason why it's been rejected. Either it's too vague, it's too imprecise. There might be already a case decided that's rejected the language. You know, hopefully they're giving a reason for rejecting it.
But the
so we can ignore the town council.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of it, not the town. I'm thinking like a attorney council. You're talking about the town council.
Town council, yes.
Sorry. I'm thinking you sent it to your town attorney, who's also sometimes called the council.
No, the town council is responsible for approving any ordinances.
Right, sorry. Okay. So I take all of that back then. So.
I like your answer, though.
I'm going to get you all into trouble. So they're the ones that have to, authorize it under your statute, under your ordinance. Yeah. Yeah. Do they give reasons why they reject it?
They'll talk about it. Sometimes they explain why. And sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not often that they don't accept. But we just actually made an amendment to our charter that required all amendments made to our zoning ordinance from the planning board to be directly reviewed by the town council. In the past, they have been referred to the ordinance committee, which is a group of two or three council members that sometimes they will pass through the changes without any concern, but other times they will make some changes. And so the ordinance that ends up at the council can be a lot different than what the planning board recommended.
Right, yeah. So, the town council takes over from the smaller towns that have the selectmen, and then the legislative body is the townspeople at town's meeting. So in those smaller towns, you put it on the town warrant, and they're the ones that can, the planning board could work for 3 years and craft this beautiful ordinance, and then you get to the legislative body, which in this case is the town council. And so, yes, they're the ones that are stepping in the shoes of the townsfolk and deciding whether or not to accept it or not. I mean, I guess if some people felt strongly in the community, there must be a referendum process.
But otherwise, the council's decision is final.
Well, I have to read the actual language in there, but I suspect, yes, it's because it's similar to, because they're the legislative body of the town. So if they reject it, it's like a town meeting. If it gets rejected, it's rejected.
Yeah. They hold a public hearing. I'll take that back. They don't. We changed that in the charter too. Now, this public hearing is optional. The planning board holds a public hearing.
Yeah.
Because of the law requiring it. But the town council now does not hold public hearings unless they feel it's appropriate to do so.
Right. Yeah.
By charter, that was a charter change. Before that, they had to hold a public hearing for every ordinance change.
Yeah.
So there were two public hearings for every amendment to the zoning ordinance. So
right.
Got kind of redundant. So.
I mean, it would be helpful to know why they rejected it, obviously, whether they're just rejecting it outright as a bad idea or just because of some language they don't like. I mean, it's... makes it hard if you're trying to draft changes. But yes, you can't just... If they've rejected it, you can't implement it.
Mm. But could the planning board go back to the council and ask them to reconsider?
Absolutely. And you can go back asking what, for some reasons and some feedback. You might not get it, but... And you can keep resubmitting different versions.
doesn't happen very often where they're not happy with what you're bringing forward.
Well, occasionally we get short-circuited, though. You know, and we don't even get a chance to really evaluate an ordinance, if you will, to the, you know, because the council already tells us, don't bother sending it, we're not going to pass it. I'm thinking of the marijuana.
Yeah, that was the case where the council actually requested you to draft an ordinance to ban non-medical marijuana retail sales in Bucksport. They asked you to do that, and you agreed to do it. I'm not sure if you were all in favor of doing that, but you did agree.
Well, I thought it was silly because I think any crop is a crop. I think anything has potential income. I don't see any difference from raising potatoes or anything else as long as it's controlled. Yeah. And I just think my own personal feeling was we were short-sighted in that. Yeah. And the council was short-sighted because
but you still
of
have,
the
you
stigma.
Did you still hold a public hearing on that, right?
Mm. We did.
Yeah.
We had two people show up that were against it.
Yeah.
Yeah, one was the
nurse.
One was the nurse.
Yeah.
Town nurse, and one was, I don't remember the other person. Well, he may have been a policeman. Yeah. I'm not sure.
And I can tell you right now that was probably because of the problems associated with it.
Well, I'm sure it is.
The residual effects from that type of thing go far beyond.
People have no idea.
It goes far beyond the actual substance or the actual crop that you're describing. The things that are associated with it cause a lot of problems. So.
Yeah, but at the time, though, I remember thinking that people were thinking that and saying that.
Yeah.
But you go down the street here a mile, you're in another town.
Correct.
And to think that that problem, you know, those ill effects are going to stop at the town line.
Mm, exactly.
Agreed.
Is kind of ridiculous.
Correct, yeah. Well, I agree with that also.
It's not. This isn't the Wizard of Oz here.
Right.
It's
like,
so if the planning board had decided to refuse to comply with the council's orders or draft an ordinance with that language in it that they wanted, as a municipal reviewing authority, and that's this board's duty to comply with that law requirement, does that mean that the town council can't draft their own changes to our zoning ordinance? That has to be done by the planning board?
No, I don't see... I don't think the planning board are the only ones necessarily that could draft the ordinance, especially if they refuse to do so. But, you know, like private citizens can draft an ordinance and by petition have that submitted as well.
Yeah.
You know, if they get enough signatures on there, you would then have to hold a public hearing and then send it up to the town council to obviously probably reject, but... that they still have that process of doing that. That's a good question. I don't know the definitive answer to that. I think they would organize another subcommittee or something to do.
For years, that's the way it was done. The planning board was never involved in our zoning ordinance for years until I finally convinced the town manager that the law says you really need to involve these people, and he agreed. Eventually, and now every amendment to our maintenance ordinance comes through this board.
But it doesn't mean you can't farm it out to somebody else to draft the actual drafting.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have a subcommittee made up of other talented people in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can come back to the planning board to refine or change or, you know. I can look into that more. I don't know the answer to what would happen if the planning board refused to do something, to draft an ordinance.
Would the council remove all of us from office?
No, they cannot.
They put us here, don't they?
Yeah.
They take us out?
They can only remove you. It's a section if it's...
derelict of duty? Like not acting upon their... I don't know.
I don't have it in front of me, but it's like 2016 or something in the municipal statute, and it has to be for something decently egregious. Not just because they
not following orders of a superior.
They didn't like
you.
They can't remove you because they don't like your decisions or opinions.
Sure.
But maybe refusing to do something you're supposed to do would be enough to do that. But I can't imagine that would be the way it would play out. There'd be some other...
Well, one would think that we could sit down and could come to an agreement or an understanding on something. Because there's just not enough of that in this day and age, apparently.
I know.
Listen, I'm not from here, okay? I've only lived here for 35 years. I'm not from here. So you got to forgive me.
Since I might have you beat, I think I've been here about...
69.
Well, actually, my sister moved here in 1964, so I've been kind of associated. But I haven't lived here that long. 30 years, I guess.
I was away for 5.
Seen a few changes. I think
is there anything else?
I mean, I could talk more, but I think that the other ones that I feel are cause the most issues. Do you have any other questions, Jeff? Because you've been kind of managing the boards for many, many years.
Nothing comes to mind.
I see. So all the board members have manuals, so you're given, are they like the MMA manuals that you have?
Yeah, I used to give out paper copies, but now I do a digital copy.
Yeah.
And that was updated a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah.
So it's, I think you found it helpful.
My manual is now 474 pages long.
Yes. Yeah, I've got a paper copy of it here. It is.
Yeah.
This is from 2011, so there's an awful lot of information.
And I have read it. It is voluminous.
Yeah.
No offense. I read it at the beginning. I can tell after the first 10 pages it was written by two attorneys. Okay. I'm sorry. I've been in law enforcement for over 30 years. But it's a nice manual. It really is. I don't know if you had anything to do with that, but whoever did, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there.
No, they're great manuals, and they're a great reference. And you're not obviously not expected to know everything that's in it all the time, but that would be my first recommendation is to, if you're having a question about if someone has standing or jurisdiction and those kinds of things, look it up in your manual and read through it, because it's going to help you out.
I had no idea the scope of subjects that could come before this board.
Yep.
I mean, I had no idea until I went through that manual, Jeff. I mean, it's just, I had no idea.
Well, that's a good thing to talk about, what kind of applications you will be getting. You get land use applications for site plan reviews. You've done a couple recently, two projects out in the industrial park that were new developments. You'll also get subdivision applications, and there'll be one of those coming up shortly for you. And you might get a flood permit application. Most of those are through my office, but there is one type of flood permit. I can't think what it is off the top of my head, but I think it does require planning board review. And that's it. Those are the only ordinances that might involve you. The land use ordinance is the one that obviously you deal with most of the time.
So apart from that quarry, there's not a lot of gravel pits in town.
Well, we have a lot of gravel pits, but nothing that's...
But they're existing.
What's that?
They're all existing.
Existing, yeah. We haven't had a controversial application for quite some time. I think the last one was the Von Thibodeau.
Well, yeah, there was one that he just kind of stormed out of the meeting and never came back. They wanted to do the septic dewatering over on 46 somewhere. I don't know his name, but
That was a case where there was an existing development that had been approved by the planning board. You approved a site plan that was very specific about what was being approved.
Oh, we made some changes.
And he decided that he wanted to expand the development by bringing gravel in to fill to create more usable space.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was informed that he needed to come back to the planning board to change the approval of his site plan to amend it. And he was not too keen on doing that, but
he sold it instead, didn't he?
Yes, it's under
membership now. So he sold us to them.
He came in to tell us that he wasn't going to come in. So it was.
But I think he was hoping that you would tell him that he didn't need your approval, right, but you didn't say that.
And you know, somebody mentioned, if somebody comes in with an application that is 50% or 60% complete, I don't lose any sleep. If they want something, they need to do what they need to do to get it done. You know, we don't owe it to them. They owe it to themselves, I think. And if they come in with it, we've had several, like the gas station, the church, and then the mussel. I wasn't here for the lobster one, but those were great. I mean, they had everything right there in the package.
Well, some have been near perfect. And that's true, but there's been a lot of money and engineering and science behind a lot of them.
But if they're concerned, if they're serious about a project, and they're going to do it completely, they come in with a great plan.
Yeah. But the smaller business owner, 5 or 6 employees or something, you know, he may not have the expertise or know exactly what he needs or where to get it. You know, it is a gap here. It's not that easy. I've been doing civil engineering for 50 years now, and I'm not uncomfortable with it, but the average person out there would be. It's a learning curve. Some applicants don't have to, but they just pay their way and get what they need.
I mean, you can get CES or one of those local folks. They'll do something. Doesn't cost you an arm and a leg.
I mean, oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, generally, if they don't have a surveyor or an engineer or someone on board, it can be difficult. Difficult to know what, you know, extract the information. But if they do, those people are, they know exactly what the board's looking for, and they'll prepare it.
Too long.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, I'm curious now. I'm going to look into that issue. What happens if the town reject your ordinances? I suspect you're stuck with that decision.
Anything else?
Time for dinner.
Okay.
I just wanted to have a discussion on the agenda, too, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
We just passed it over there. Sorry.
As I mentioned earlier, there'll be a subdivision application coming to you possibly at your next meeting. It's from the AIM property up there. They've done this one split of that property that they conveyed to Bucksport Generation LLC. It was a power plant area. And the remaining portion of the lot was retained by Bucksport Mills LLC. These are subsidiaries of AIM Corporation. They're going to convey a large chunk of that remaining parcel to Whole Oceans, but keep still a section by Bucksport Mills LLC. So the end result is you'll have 3 lots created within a 5-year period. That's a subdivision by definition, and it requires your approval. So that should be coming.
And didn't we see some news about an ethanol processing plant, wood alcohol processing?
I haven't seen that.
It's been in the newspaper.
What, in the local newspaper?
Yeah.
I guess I haven't read that yet. Is that this last week's paper?
No, a couple of weeks ago.
I missed that. Dawn fantasizing.
Huh?
Dawn fantasizing.
Maybe you dreamed about reading it.
I couldn't see the
factual enterprise.
Was,
but related to that.
Solvent, you know, monetary solvent.
Related to that division, when you see the plans, the lots that are created have essentially 100% coverage of impervious surfaces. You know, this is the mill site. It's all concrete and pavement and buildings. So, but when you create a lot, that has 100% coverage, that's a nonconformity because our ordinance only limits 80% lot coverage. You have to have 20% vegetation.
Like mill site, never been 100% covered at any time.
Yeah. It's never been. No, it's not even close. Not even close because you know you're talking about a 112-acre lot, and all of the development is at the lower end primarily. So there's a big chunk of vegetated lot that the lot as it is now is conforming. It's conforming to coverage. It's conforming to shorefront requirements. It's conforming to street frontage requirements. This conforming to building height requirements. But when you split the lot now into smaller lots, then you have to look at the standards, how the standards apply. And one of those standards is lot coverage. Now, because of that issue, I'm going to suggest that we, and I've already asked this question to the DEP, is they would, if they would consider allowing us to increase the lot coverage to 100%. So we don't have to worry about that. And to remove the minimum shore frontage requirement, so we don't have to worry about that when they want to split this property up into smaller lots. I sent that email out today. I haven't got a response yet, but you may recall that they agreed to do that in this district here. They allowed us to eliminate minimum shore front requirements. They allowed us to have 100% lot coverage.
Oh, okay.
And they reduced the lot size to 1,000 square feet in this district or in here now.
So it's been done in past practice.
Just the side of the street.
Okay. We explained to DEP, we thoroughly justified the need for us to do that because we were finding that people wanted to do things with their properties on Main Street and couldn't because they couldn't meet the dimensional requirements.
Right.
So that's been changed. And I'm hoping they'll have the same opinion about the issues with dividing up the mill property into smaller lots, primarily because of the impervious surface issue of exceeding 80%.
On the back side of that, if there was more of an issue, couldn't the property, the portion that AIM intends to keep, couldn't they restructure that property a little bit to plant some trees and some grass to obtain that 80%?
Well, it's covered primarily by concrete slabs, which they want to keep for reuse. All the slabs were where the mill buildings were. And, of course, there's driveways to asphalt.
I don't look at those slabs as being permanent for any buyer.
Well, that's a decision
If he wants to leave it there and a buyer comes in and buys it, he doesn't have to keep them by any means.
Nobody's saying that, Ed.
No, nobody's
saying that.
And you must be asking, 100% lot coverage must be applying to these power plants. That's the only lot that is anywhere near 100%.
Well, the other one that would be if the split that Ames proposing for the piece to be kept by Bucksport Mills after they convey the whole ocean, that piece would be 100% lot coverage as well too. It's comprised
I
of
see where those lines.
It's it's comprised of the remaining buildings and pavement. There's no vegetation. There's just no vegetation. Certainly not 20% vegetation. So by changing our ordinance to deal with that, we don't have to worry about those questions and whether they're creating a conforming lot or a non-conforming lot. So when I hear back from DEP, hopefully they'll consider doing this, and I'll draft some changes and bring those to you possibly at the next meeting.
Excellent.
So railroad still owns their property, which is basically all the frontage. And then, of course, the highway is beyond that.
Street frontage is another one, too, that I'm going to suggest we eliminate. There's no need to have a minimum street frontage for that property. It's 100 feet right now per principal structure. I did some rough calculations on the Whole Oceans project. If I'm anywhere accurate, they'll only have about 10% lot coverage of their property. So they're purchasing almost 92 acres. And if my estimations on the size of the building and parking lot is accurate, maybe about 10% of that will be covered.
Isn't their plot right about where the wood operation is going on right now?
Yeah.
I know it's north of the main entrance and south of the north gate. that this Whole Foods plot is going to be. So is it more or less centered on where the wood operation is going on right now?
Pretty close to it, yeah.
That still leaves
that's a lot of that's up in that flat area where they processed the wood the last few years. Not so much down in the old wood yard.
Mm-hmm.
But up.
Yeah, where they're doing it now.
Yeah, there was some new buildings.
All those logs build up.
There was some new buildings put up back.
Yeah, where about 10 years ago.
Scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About 15 years ago, they built a drum debarking facility where they're now at mobile debarking.
Yeah, how many million one that they turned down? They tore down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right about there.
Another thing I wanted to give you an update on the at your last meeting, I asked you to review the proposed changes to the subdivision ordinance. You weren't here, Brian, for that, but the proposed changes were to updating the phosphorus manual label and to allow, in some cases, a gravel road to be used for a subdivision. That went to the ordinance committee on the 10th, and they weren't happy with that change. But surprisingly, they wanted to change the language so that any subdivision could be provided with a gravel road. Right now, the ordinance says any subdivision must have a paved road.
Yeah. So
they're suggesting we do a 180 and allow gravel roads for subdivisions.
So they weren't happy with because we didn't go and make... We didn't go far enough.
Was it that they had to have a paved road, or that they actually, or they had to have access by paved road?
No, a subdivision that includes a road.
Right.
That road needs to be built to town standards, which includes pavement.
Okay. All right. That road.
Royal Ridge is an example of that.
Right. Okay. Right.
Yeah. But the language I had drafted would allow. In one particular case, a property owner out on Brewer Lake, he's accessed from Strickland Ridge Road onto a private road he built that goes down to the shore. He wanted to put a subdivision down there. The ordinance would require him to pave that road. And I'm not even sure that he might have to pave the portion of Strickland Ridge Road that gets to his road. But at the very least, he'd have to pave that road. Right. And he argued that it didn't make sense that... You know, you're going down a gravel road on Strickland Ridge Road. Why do I have to pave my road?
Right.
So the language I drafted would allow him to do a subdivision without having to pave his road. But as I said, for some reason, the ordinance committee felt that we should be a bit more liberal in that and say that anybody who wants to build a road for a subdivision they're proposing does not need... They have to build a road to town standards, but they're not required to pave it unless they want the town to take it.
Huh. That makes sense.
Didn't it, you had said that there's less phosphorus runoff on a dirt road than there is a paved road? Did you say that?
No.
Okay.
No, because
I don't think that's true.
And I have no idea. So I'm asking.
No. I think you get more phosphorus on a paved road. But I'm not 100% sure on that.
So what was the intent of that? To do away with every dirt road? Boy, I can remember in the early 80s when I first came to work in Bucksport. Man, we had a bunch of dirt roads.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we had a lot of dirt roads.
There isn't another subdivision I can think of in town that is on a private road. Royal Ridge is the only one I can think of. That was built for that subdivision. Every other subdivision I can think of is on a town road.
Well, Royal Ridge is on Central Street, so...
Well, I know, but it was a road built for a subdivision.
But there's a trail back just above that. That's not paved.
I don't know if that went through subdivision review. That's probably predated subdivision. Harriman Cove, I'm not sure if that went through subdivision review.
I think that's been here since God invented mobile homes.
Yeah.
But if we get the application...
Code was bringing the septic system up to...
If we get the application for Hawes subdivision now, you're going to be looking at a paved road there, unless they change the ordinance before you get the application.
No. It only has to be paved if it's going to be taken over by the town. You just said it, so forget it.
That's the change.
That's the change.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, the ordinance says that the roads have to be built to town standards, and you can't waive asphalt. That's what the ordinance says now.
That's not what you just said.
Well, if there's a change.
I'm just saying that if the ordinance is changed, the changes that the ordinance committee likes to make, wants to make, are adopted by the town code, then you're only required to build your road to town standards as far as gravel goes and pave it if you want the town to take it. Okay. If you don't want the town to take it,
that's an easy
fix. If you don't want the town to take it, it does not need to be paved, but still needs to be built to town standards. That's what they asked for.
But it's only proposed.
That's the proposed.
Yeah.
It's not a fact yet.
Yeah.
We actually met the ordinance committee's meeting again at 5 on the 31st, I think, is in this council meeting. And we met at 5 on the 10th, and we went to about 6:45. They also reviewed the proposed food sovereignty ordinance, a change to council rules. There's a new committee structure that's being proposed. They've moved down from, I think, 9 or 10 committees down to 4. And they reviewed a proposed update to property maintenance standards. There were a few people who attended that meeting and who expressed concerns about some of the changes. But the biggest change for that they were supportive of is safety inspections for multifamily buildings. The proposal is to require full building inspection of multifamily buildings and commercial buildings with at least 2 dwelling units in them once every 5 years.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would be done by both the code enforcement office and the fire department.
Yeah.
I asked the question, it was my proposal 5 years, but after I'd written that, I did a count of how many buildings that would be involved, and there are actually 64 properties that would be inspected with about 400 units total.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Every 5 years.
That averages about once a month, one per month over a 5-year period to get them all done in a 5-year cycle.
Yeah.
And I asked the committee if they thought that was, if they thought maybe we should go a bit longer than that, but they did not want to go longer. They stuck for 5 years.
Oh, I agree.
So we're going to be busy.
Probably have to get an assistant.
Yeah. Another proposed standard that surprisingly they didn't feel comfortable was a proposal that storm damaged trees, diseased or dead trees that pose a public safety hazard must be removed to the extent needed to eliminate the hazard. And they weren't comfortable with that, so they asked that to be taken out. I pointed out that we have that language now for trees in a shoreland zone. If you have a tree that fits that category in a shoreland zone, mm-hmm. the language is in our ordinance now that we can deal with that. But and they said, why not make it townwide? But they didn't want to go that far. So that was the only other substantial change to the property maintenance standards ordinance that they did not want to keep in there. Other changes were very minor, just adding clarity, reorganization to make the ordinance read a little bit better. But so that's going to be the changes they asked me to make will be looked at again at the next ordinance committee meeting. I think it's the 31st at 5:00. And then another chapter 12 is being amended primarily to deal with the parking requirements in this parking lot here. You may know that the chamber building mm-hmm. is being sold, and as part of the sale, the new owner is being given 2 parking spaces in this parking lot.
One.
Yeah. In case they put a tenant in there, for their own use too, they could park. But if they put an apartment in the building, then the tenants would need overnight parking. The problem is, this parking lot does not allow overnight parking. So the change to Chapter 12 will change. It'll change that. So that's parking. Overnight parking will be allowed in designated spaces, and there'll be 2 spaces here that'll be designated for the apartment, and also the spaces down by the motel. which have often been used by motel customers, the park overnight.
Quite often used lane.
Will be clearly identified that that's okay, or right now it's not technically okay. But there's no signage down there, I don't think, that says you can't park. But
is that a trade-off? Keep the gate open?
You're referring to the either three or four right here alongside
Delta.
And then the other change to Chapter 12 would be just to correct a conflict between the signs that are out here. The signs out here say there's no roller skates,
bicycles, scooters. I walk by it almost every day.
Yeah, but scooters is not in Chapter 12. So, it's on a sign that's being prohibited, but it should
is
also
that
say that.
A motorized scooter or one of those scooters that you...
What about a motorized wheelchair? Lord, you ain't going to that picture, are you?
No, that's not prohibited.
But is that just the foot scooter, you know, the two-wheel thing that kids always...
Segway? Hmm? No, it's like they call them the razors. Hmm? The two wheels in line with a little board between them.
We'd call scooter, didn't we?
Yeah,
at one point in time, they had a handle.
The brand
handle.
Name is Razor.
Something did. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking motorized one.
No.
Oh, you're talking the toys.
Yeah.
Well, kind of toy.
You can't ride a bicycle. You can't use roller skates or inline skates, although I don't know why you'd want to on that kind of a hard surface to skate on.
Some of the bricks are getting a little uneven there.
Skill.
But we have a local officer that rides a bicycle up and down there.
We do.
Public safety
is
exempt. Public safety is exempt from things like that. Yeah. It says no bicycles. That's not what they really mean. It's what it means, but it's not what it really means.
So anyway, I think that's all I have for discussion.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?